Well, Spare Rooms is a it's a short film that the premise is pretty simple. It's 1985. It's the rural Midwest, and a same-sex family's teenage son invites a friend to stay overnight, and the family bends over backwards to appear in the closet, and in doing so, everything just goes absolutely wrong. And the way that the son has to keep his family's secret intact and you know what he has to do that, I think is something that it's the type of subterfuge that most people who are on the outside looking in have had to go through before.
And of course, the secret is that.
Of course, that he's living, that his family, you know, his mom's a lesbian, that he's growing up in a same-sex household, again, you know, in 1985 in the rural Midwest, where you don't have the type of accepting support structure that you usually assume, that you see in quite a few LGBT-themed films, certainly that are dealing, you know, in contemporary America. When you go into the world of the rural Midwest in 1985, it's the height of the Reagan era, and there is no support structure. And, you know, I mean, I think Spare Rooms for me was in some ways a reaction to seeing contemporary films dealing with LGBT issues where it was as if this wasn't an issue anymore. And so I wanted to take it back just a little bit to a place that was only 30 years ago where there's a twist where you don't have that. And what do you do? What do you do when you have to lie in that situation and there's no place else to go?
Well, and the spare room in the title refers to this, the grand plan of the fiction,
Sure.
the maintenance of this room that's supposed to be one of the women's bedrooms.
And that was something that when I started talking with folks within the LGBT community about this, folks who were older, who were from that time period, it was actually, it opened up a whole other level of conversation because it was something that a lot of folks had forgotten about. In fact, there was one couple that I was talking with. They were like, "Oh my God, Megan, do you remember when we had the spare bedroom?" And if you had a family and if you were trying to maintain that fiction, that was a key part of your physical life. You made sure that wherever you moved, you had that extra room so that you could maintain the fiction when people came to visit. And that's something that I think has been lost.
Yeah.
So it's amazing how even that little detail in 30, 20 years has changed. It's no longer expected that you're going to have this spare room if you're trying to lead a respectable life and you're trying to live a life in the closet, you know, in these areas where it's not necessarily, you know, where it's frowned upon.
Right. And, you know, you've got characters who, for the most part, go about their daily lives. They're a nice family unit. I've seen a few clips, and they do all the things that a family does together and ribbing each other and joking with each other and those sorts of things. But to think about that element of fear just being slightly, you know, over your shoulder at all times is a little bit troubling.
Can be. I mean, I wanted to, but I didn't want it to seem so omnipresent. Usually, when you have films that are dealing with LGBT themes, and if you're dealing with the closet, or if you're dealing with, for example, I mean, I think Boys Don't Cry is a perfect example. If you go back to, you know, that, you know, earlier example of an LGBT themed film where things went terribly wrong, I didn't want to have that kind of cloud hanging over the situation. I wanted to find a vehicle where we could show it as kind of, yeah, this is, you know, you can still have a family and ultimately, you know, still do your day to day. But this was still a part of your everyday and it didn't have to define your life. I mean, I guess some folks would look at it and say, well, it's of course it's defining your life. You have a spare bedroom, for God's sake. You know, but at the same time, not really. I mean, you're still a family, and I really wanted to see this not so much as just an LGBT themed film, but really a family film. And that's really how I see it. And I think that's how I tried to get the actors who were involved to really look at it, was that, you know, you're really a family. And I mean, I think it, you know, even in our rehearsal process, we didn't even get around to going through the script until about maybe 2 months into rehearsals. Prior to that, I just had them getting together, cooking dinner, watching movies. And I think that that's kind of the universal appeal to what Spare Rooms is trying to get at, is that regardless of what your actual structure is, you're a family. And I'm very much interested in how people make their own families. I think that's been something that kind of runs through what I've been working on, and Spare Rooms was one way to do that.
And, you know, you're right. Attitudes now have changed. My daughter goes to school with, it's become very, the kids are not even impressed when two moms show up for, you know, a pageant or something, or two dads show up. It's just part of, you know, they just talk about it like it's just a normal thing.
And I really wanted to put a spotlight on a time period where it wasn't necessarily life or death, but it was certainly an issue. You could lose your job over it. You could still lose your job over it. I wanted to bring it back to a point where this didn't just happen. These parents didn't just come out of the woodwork after Melissa Etheridge. You know, These folks have been around forever. And so I wanted to walk it back a little bit, because right now our narrative has jumped to Modern Family and to all of these other things where it's not a thing. I wanted to back it up a little bit and say, you know what? Even though you're comfortable with it where you are, I can take you to places in this country where that is not the case. And it is still very much, in some ways, what you would have found at this time period in 1985. So let's step back and take an assessment of where we are.
Well, you've brought together sort of a super group of people to put this project together. And I'd love to hear how you came to work with Joe and the other people who are involved in the project. Joe, how did you come to this project?
I suppose I met Matt at last year's Maryland Film Festival. We both had films showing. And at some point, Matt said, I think I have a script I'd like you to look at and see if you're interested in it. And it had been a long time since I'd worked on anything narrative. So I was eager to sort of get my toes back into that water. And the next thing you know, all my friends, my network of filmmaking friends were all working on this project together.
And you know, I mean, people really, once people started getting an idea of what the script was about, what we were doing with it, you know, and who the people were who were involved with it, that certainly got the ball rolling, you know. I mean, Joe had just come off of Hit and Stay. I had just come off of By and By. You know, then we brought in Skiz Cizik to do, you know, to be the director of photography on it. And, you know, it just kind of grew from there and really, really snowballed. Yeah. One of the draws, both for me and for Joe, in getting this film into production was just the idea that we wanted to do something that had a quick turnaround. Quite honestly, I mean, I think that was part of it.
It's very, very appealing. I've worked for 6 years on Hit and Stay, and the idea that we shot this in January and by next year people will be seeing it one way or another.
Yeah.
Very appealing.
Yes.
I'm interested about the casting process, because that must have been kind of fun, casting your life, you know? Who gets a chance to do that? You hear people joke about, like, well, I'd like so-and-so to play me in the movie, but, you know, you literally had to do that. Was that a kind of a fun process?
It was fun. It was also a matter of, you know, learning how to distance yourself from that. Because, I mean, you know, you can say you're telling your own story, but you need to give an actor room to make it their own. You can't, you know, turn it into, you know, oh, I did this, you do this. You can't do that. So that was certainly a learning experience for me. It was learning how to put that space between it and let actors kind of take it where they wanted to go. So, you know, the casting process actually went pretty smoothly. You know, I had no idea where to go with that, because I had been doing documentary. Your cast is already right there. So, you know, I went to Rainn Alexander at the Maryland Film Fest, and I gave her the script. I said, are there any folks that you know? How do I do this? I literally went to her and I said, how do I do this? And so she started the process of kind of circulating the script and, you know, tipping me off to different kind of acting boards, things like that. And, you know, we had about maybe 35 people audition for the various roles.
Wow.
And it was really, I mean, you know, there were a lot of great actors who came in. I was really amazed.
That was the really fun part of the process for me, because I've never really, I've been on casting calls But I've never sat in one from this angle.
Yeah.
And you find yourself rooting for certain for everyone sure. in a way.
Yeah.
Sure.
And it's like playing music. You sort of know when, you know, you've got someone that works. It's
right
like
thing.
Yeah, there were a few, I mean, folks who came in who, you know, knew right away. Others I had to kind of sleep on it. And you know, to be honest, I mean, I could have gone a lot of different ways with this. I mean, ultimately, you know, you look for folks who seem like they're going to work with each other very well, and you're looking for folks who can, within a very short period of time, make a role their own. When I found somebody who could do something with an element that I'd been living with for years and take it someplace else within 2 or 3 seconds... that was when I knew I had something good. And, you know, that really was just, you know, again, letting other people take it and go where they want to with it. In a lot of ways, that was very liberating for me, both as a writer and as a director.
Ray?
Hmm?
Walker Lambert.
Yeah.
Just say no. There's still boxes. Nothing's unpacked.
It's gonna happen.
I know. I just didn't think.
Yeah. So soon.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm. Is he? So. Okay. We're sisters.
Sisters.
Don't worry, babe. We're covered.
Actors Melissa O'Brien and Valerie Perez share in a scene from the film Spare Rooms, a family fiction. We spoke with producer Joe Trapea and writer-director Matthew Bowden. You can find out more about the film online at sparerumsmovie.com. And that's also where you can find out how to help finish the project through the Spare Rooms Indiegogo fundraising campaign. For The Signal, I'm Lisa Morgan.